On the Ground is produced by the Global NGO Executive Committee, a storied nonprofit that has for 60 years partnered with the United Nations to guarantee a voice at the decision-making table for civil society leaders. GNEC offers services to more than 1,600 UN-vetted global NGOs, which are on the front lines of tackling the most pressing issues of our time. I'm Adrienne Berg, a member of the NGO Committee on Aging New York and the host of On the Ground.
Hello, hello, hello. This is Adrienne Berg, and this is On the Ground. Now, this is a second part of a two-part series. Last month, you heard about the Coalition for Stem Cells for Health Span. 275 different organizations banding together for longevity through science. But there's a lot of work being done on the ground right now for issues of aging. And we have here today Julie Biles. She is with the International Longevity Centers Global Alliance. And she's going to be talking about what we're doing for gender equality, ageism, caring for the folks right now, the people who have not yet had the experience of all those stem cells, all the gene therapies, everything we've been talking about. And they still have chronic conditions of aging. Very, very serious issue. So thank you, Julie, for being with us today.
Thank you, Adrienne. It's great to be here. Thank you.
Now, I do want to ask you first about your organization. You said, let's just call the ILC, but yep. Let's unpack it. It's International Longevity Centers Global Alliance. So tell us about that.
So the first International Longevity Centers were first established in both Japan and in the USA. And they were the first, one of the founders of this concept was Bob Butler from the National Institutes of Health in the USA. And he actually was very interested in what he called the longevity dividend, the fact that if we live longer lives, we can get more out of our lives. So I think when we're talking about stem cells and scientific breakthroughs in terms of longevity, that's fine, but we've got to ask ourselves, what do we do with those lives? Now that's important, not only as individuals, but collectively as a society. If we're going to have people living longer, what does that mean for society? And what are the benefits that we can all derive from that?
Yes. Now, you know, it's interesting because you bring me back. I was part of the International Longevity Center in New York City, and I actually studied under Bob Butler.
Wow.
Who, yes, he made me one of the 20 Age Boom Fellows, and it was a fellowship given by the New York Times. For those of you who don't know, that New York Center is now part of Columbia University with a Professor Fried at the head of that center. So one of the things certainly is this longevity dividend. Now, in the United Nations, on October 1st, we're going to have the International Day of Older Persons. And we have a heck of a time, and you know this, having the UN recognize issues of aging in almost any part of their agenda, even the summit of the future. Probably because the idea of the longevity dividend is not coming through. So let me throw that to you, Julie. The longevity dividend. What does it mean when we have active, contributory, older adults to an economy, to a culture?
There's so many contributions that people make to society that go well beyond work. We're not just machines. And so there's all of the contribution that people can make to the social fabric, to holding communities together and keeping communities strong. And we often talk about older people as if they're a burden, as if they're going to need lots of services, as if they're some sort of nuisance that we have to deal with. But in fact, it couldn't be more the reverse, that older people contribute tremendously to their families and to societies. But sometimes we get in the way of that, we hinder that. So I think as societies, one of the things we have to do is to rethink what we look like that enables older people to keep being an asset to our societies and not make them feel useless and make them feel like there's some sort of annoyance that has to be dealt with.
So let's take a look at that. One of the things that you will be speaking about, everybody who I hope is listening and able to be in Cape Town, will be in Cape Town in September for the International Federation on Aging meeting. It's one of the largest United Nations related organizations that has to do with aging. And you're going to be talking about age-friendly communities, places where there's a real place for the older adult. And when we come back, I want to ask you a couple of questions about that and how you see that from an international point of view. So don't you guys go anywhere.
Are you interested in high-quality online SDG education programs at no cost and with a flexible schedule? Through the Global NGO Education Committee, GNEC, and Rutgers Preparatory School, the Innovation Academy is offering a variety of programs that address both local and global challenges that should be of interest to you. It provides NGO a virtual platform for online courses and programs from top schools and other organizations designed for every grade level from world-class educators. Take advantage of this amazing opportunity to expand your knowledge, be connected, be inspired by NGO leaders and educators. You will get all the information you need at the Innovation Academy at GNEC.NGO.
And now we're back and we're here with Julie Biles, and she is telling us all about the activities of the International Longevity Center's Global Alliance. So the first thing I'm going to ask you about, age-friendly atmospheres. Is it regional? We hear that Singapore is a paradise for the older adult. Is it regional, or is these, or can we say that we have a global issue of ages?
Oh, we definitely have a global issue of ageism, but ageism exists on multitudes of levels. So back to our organisation, we have 16 different country members. So there are 16 different ILCs, which all act independently and do their own thing within their own country and within their own setting and with their own people. And that can be quite varied. So with Singapore, International Longevity Centre, for instance, is part of the SAL Foundation in Singapore. And they are a fantastic example of age-friendly cities and communities. So they run a community centre called the Community for Successful Ageing at Wampoa. It's in a community club, so the community members pay to be a member of this club, and there's a beautiful building that includes things like childcare and all sorts of other facilities, but it's a place where older people can come. So they can come and they can do various activities. There's a clinic that, and this is one thing I really love, because I think that sometimes when we're trying to do the best by older people and their chronic conditions by giving them lots of checkups and treatments and tests and doctor visits, we're actually maybe robbing them of some of their lives because they're spending it in doctors' waiting rooms.
Yes.
But at Komsar in Wampoa, what they can be doing is upstairs playing mahjong or cooking something or chatting with their friends or doing whatever, doing a dance class. And when the doctor's ready for them, they'll come and take them out of their dance class rather than them sitting in the waiting room and not being able to commit to their dance class. So I think that's fantastic. And I love that idea of turning that waiting room on its head, so that not that the doctor's waiting for the older person, because that would be inefficient, but while the person's waiting, they're just getting on with their lives. They're not waiting at all. And so yes. I love the idea. So I think that's a brilliant example of age-friendly environment. And I see, you know, having people waiting endlessly in doctor's waiting rooms and hospital hallways to see a doctor is the opposite of an age-friendly environment. So I like that example from Singapore. But, you know, lots of different countries have lots of different ways of approaching this, and people may be well aware of what happens in China. Every time I go to China, I find it delightful to go for a wander in the people's parks, because they are full of people doing Tai Chi or dancing or playing hacky sack or doing something, so like these sort of ceremonial sort of sword dances. And it's fantastic. And they're very welcoming. So you stand there and have a look, but they're come in. And they're so joyous. So yes. Again, that's another example of an age-friendly environment. But sometimes in some settings, older people don't feel there's a place for them. They feel they can barely get past their front gate, they might walk to the letterbox and pick up a letter, and maybe the postman hasn't been, or there's no letter that came. So they'll go back in and sit in their chair and watch the television. And I don't think that's getting the most out of the longevity dividend. So being able to have what is technically referred to as a third space. So we've got our own first space, which is our private space. We might have work and places like that. But a third space is a communal space. And I think we have to be careful to preserve those communal spaces for all of the community, because that's how you make connection, but particularly for older people to be able to know that there's somewhere where they can belong, not just to mix with older people, to mix with younger people as well, but where they really feel welcome. Yeah.
Yes. So, you know, GNEC, our global NGO executive committee, is very proud of an intergenerational endeavor that we have called Hackathon. And it's one of the few, unfortunately few, really successful multi-generational institutions where young people, they can be as young as high school, create technology solutions for the world. But older adults could also do the same. And it's generally the older adult organizations that are actually funding this, giving the purpose prizes and all the things that keep this rolling. So this is a wonderful thing to think about. But when we deal with the reality of how younger people see older people, we don't get such a great response. And this is true in so many arenas. Either they see us, as you said, a burden. Mostly they don't want to see or cannot see the dynamics, the thought that we give, the work we do, as you said, that's unpaid, as grandparents, as mentors, on and on. Do you see any hope with regard to the way we're being regarded by younger generations who will turn into us one day?
Well, exactly. That's why ageism, this is the silliest sort of prejudice you can have, because, you know, we're lucky enough we'll get there ourselves. But look, I think one of the things we have to do to begin with, and I count myself as an older person now because I'm a card-carrying senior, according to the government of New South Wales in Australia where I live.
So, congratulations.
Oh yes, I'm proud. I think we need to start to look within ourselves, because sometimes we impose ageism on ourselves and say, oh, I'm too old to use a computer or to learn how to use a new thing. You know, I think one of the first things we need to do is to keep adapting, because the world is changing really rapidly, and it feels like it's changing faster and faster and faster. And certainly with AI, it might not be able to do much now, but wait till tomorrow and it'll be able to do everything it couldn't do today, because that's how it's changing. Now, we can either get left behind by that, or we can keep up with it and be part of it, be part of that, the gains that come from that. And also if there's some nefarious aspects to it, we need to be able to protect ourselves from those things. But look, really, I think that's one of the things we have to do, is look within ourselves, so that we're not putting limits on ourselves and say, I'm too old, I can't learn, I can't do these things. Yeah. So that's one thing, is looking within ourselves, that if we don't put those barriers on ourselves, I don't think we should be expecting other people to do. And if they do, you know, I think I'm under 5 feet tall, so I spent my whole life being underestimated. So maybe that's a superpower as I get older. People can underestimate me, think I'm some silly old granny, and then I might surprise them. So I think that's the other thing. Keep surprising people with what you can do. And so, you know, I keep being really proud of myself for being able to grab my suitcase and go places. So, yeah, I want to keep doing that as well.
Absolutely. But I'm so glad that you said it, because we need to articulate this more. I talk about being contributory, and sometimes I get criticized because I do not see older people as needy. Even those that have not had all the privileges of the world, and those that have, stop playing pickleball. Yeah, not for 5 hours a day. That's okay. But we do not have to be pickleball nation. We can get out there and make contributions constantly. And as you said, Julie, if we don't, and others see us as useless, what can we expect? So that's a little bit of tough love. On the other hand, of course, ILC works tirelessly for people who are ill, have been impoverished, have taken their rights away.
Yes. Yes.
So when we come back, I do want to talk about what's going on at the United Nations right now, in the General Assembly, which is the possibility of a treaty for the human rights of older persons, whether you, what your position is, and whether you think we're going to make that, and will it make a difference. So you guys, don't you guys go anywhere.
If you're interested in civil society and NGOs, please subscribe free to the NGO Reporter. We're gathering perspectives from the global NGO community worldwide and celebrating 30 years of connecting NGOs, the media, and civil society networks worldwide to the work of GNIC, its constituents, the NGOs, and the topical issues related to all UN SDGs. So how do you get your free copy? Well, simply go to gnic.ngo. And you know, you can also submit articles for the reporter. And if you do, you will be read by UN media and those interested in civil society, other NGOs. It's certainly worth doing. So please contact our editors and our staff at GNIC, GNEC.NGO.
And this is Adrienne Berg, and we really are having a high old time with Julie Biles today, representing to us one of the most important organizations. It is certainly very involved with the United Nations, very involved with aging organizations throughout the world, the International Longevity Center's Global Alliance. Now, we do have a couple of things going on in the U.S. We have a bill in Washington called the Thrive Bill, which would permit, in certain cases, preventive medicine for the chronic diseases of aging. The issue will always be, will we have longevity equity when we don't quite yet have health care equity? And all that equity is talked about in this new potential treaty or convention for the rights of older persons. It's been a long time in coming. I know you worked with the open-ended working group, and we did as well. What do you think? Is it going to be there? Will we have this treaty? And if so, will it make a difference? Tough question.
Yeah, so it is a tough question, but I'm an optimist. And so I'm going to say yes to both. So we will get there. I think one of the things in getting there will be eternal vigilance, because if we let it, if we take our eye off the ball, not the pickleball, but if we take our eye off the ball for even a minute, somebody new will move into the conversation and say, oh, why are we doing this? And, you know, we do see this happen because whilst we think of the UN as an organisation or individual governments as an organisation, they're actually made up of people, and the people keep changing. They might have come from a different department and into this and never been part of this conversation before. So we have continually be re-educating the people who are at the table. So we're not at the table, we're on the sidelines cheering them on. But we have to be keeping them aware and informed and understanding, cognizant of the issues and the reasons why we're pushing so hard for this. So we're pushing for a convention on the rights of older persons. And one of the arguments against it is that older people are people, so they should be covered by the convention.
Right. Human rights.
Yeah. So, but we know that we push for a convention for children. We know that we push for a convention for women. We know that we push for a convention of people with disabilities. So then you might say, well, not children, but women, doesn't that cover older women? Well, not if you don't keep reminding them that older women are women too, and that we don't stop being women at the point of we finish our reproductive responsibilities. And while they'll say, well, what about older people with disabilities? And again, older people might get pushed off that agenda because, oh, it's just aging. It's just part of getting old.
So,
I think as well as pushing for a convention on the rights of older persons, we need to keep pushing to keep keeping people on those other agenda, the universal one as well. But I argue that we all have the same rights, but some people have need for greater protections under those rights, there's more specific protections under those rights. And then, as you said, most older people for most of their lives are actually doing great. They're out walking, talking, shopping, cooking, traveling, doing all sorts of things right through to their 80s. My mother-in-law's 93. She's starting to slow down, but, you know, she's still living a great life, mostly independently. And that is true for most of us, for most of our lives. And under that, we're mostly able to be covered by the normal human rights instruments. But some people, and they don't have to be really old, because aging affects all of us differently, some people might experience these vulnerabilities at 60. In Aboriginal communities in Australia, in their 50s, they might experience some of these. I mean, of course, rights of Indigenous people are another thing as well, which we know we need protections for. So we really do need to look at what are these vulnerabilities? What, you know, in legal terms, they call them the gaps and the norms. So what are the gaps that aren't covered by the current conventions?
And what are the norms? Yes.
Yeah.
So I think that's how we got it through, by saying that there are gaps.
Yes, that's right. And if governments are reporting on these instruments, which they must do, they don't disaggregate. They say, yeah, it's all well, it's all good, you know, things are great. But if you don't disaggregate by age and gender and other intersectionality, you miss where the issues are. It might be all good for most people most of the time, but what are about the people who are frail, who are economically disadvantaged, struggling in a really old house in an area that's not well served, they don't have the internet? What are their rights looking like? And that might be lost in the reporting. So I think we do have something, need to have something that we mark ourselves against to see if we're doing the right thing or not by our peoples.
Yes. Now, just on that one point, you did mention AI, and AI is going to be relied on for data. And if the data, it does not include people over the age of 55,
it'll forget what it is.
What's the good? We will not have, as you say, we'll have no markers. We won't understand what's going on with a huge and growing segment of the population.
We'll be totally disenfranchised, even more than we already are within those human rights. You know, if you read the reports from from countries on those human rights, they don't really pull out what's happening for older people because they're not required to. So they don't. Yeah. And the other thing I think is really important is that these provide some sort of moral code that we as communities and citizens and peoples can learn to live by. And I think, you know, if we're going to have strong communities for everybody, we need these moral codes about how you do the right thing by children, how you do the right thing by people with disability, how you do the right thing by older people, women's equality, Indigenous peoples. I think we really do need, you know, gay and transsexual. I think we do need to bring out these rights and these codes that say, as societies, this is how we want to be.
You know, before we leave, one of the things that our listeners are very interested in on the ground is what's working. Because there can be burnout, there can be disappointment. And it's very inspirational for the listeners who are in NGOs all over the world doing different kinds of missions. They may have nothing to do with aging at all. To hear what you are most proud of, what has really worked with the ILC that might have surprised you or is just hot off the presses, but something that could be inspirational and we could say, you know what, you can make a difference.
Sure. So yes, you can make a difference. So what's working is we've had a strong focus on the convention. And so what's worked there is it's shifted from the open-ended working group that's closed now, and things have moved to the UN to start drafting on what the instrument should start to look at. And what's working also is we've got most countries on board with that work. So I think that's a huge shift. Doesn't mean we have an instrument yet, but we've made, you know, we flipped from one push, sort of more from a push to a pull now, where we can start pulling things in. So I think that is working, and that's really good. A lot of things working at the global network. They've just added 40 more cities and 2 more affiliates, International Longevity Centres Alliance, Global Alliance being one of the new ones, although I call us the old kids on the new block, because some of our members, like Alex Kalesh, they actually were the creators of this idea of age-friendly cities and communities. So we've got a lot of experience, but we're in that fold now, and that's exciting. So I think that's working. Obviously, that movement is growing tremendously, so that's working as well. And that doesn't mean all those cities are perfect. That means those cities are willing to work towards increasing the support they have for older people. What's working as well is looking at local levels. So making sure ageing is on the agenda of our local within countries. So, for instance, the ILC UK has a large role in influencing policymakers around aging across the different jurisdictions of the UK, and as well they have an index, healthy aging index, which they're able been able to take across Europe to get governments across Europe to start to think, oh, where do we sit in relation to this index? How do we rank, and why aren't we ranking so well?
I think that this is, again, the type of inspiration that people want. They do, particularly the younger, this time, it's the younger folks, older adults in the world of change, civil society. They've seen so much. We've seen so much that we know we can still roll with punches and get somewhere. But younger people can get frustrated because they do want to see things fast.
Yeah.
And one of the members of our board at GNIC said, United Nations is, I won't give you his name, the United Nations is like watching paint dry.
Oh, yeah.
That paint actually dries at the United Nations. So, yes, so hang in there, folks.
Yeah.
So, Julie, thank you so much for being with us. And I cannot wait for September when we see you in Cape Town at the International Federation on Aging. And I'll give a shameless plug for that organization, because I am one of the United Nations representatives from the IFA. So it's going to be really a rollicking time. Thank you for being with us, Julie.
All right. Thank you very much. See you soon. Okay.
And for everybody else, you know what I'm going to say? Never stop changing the world.